Good morning. My name is Winston Lael, and I'm an epidemiologist from the North Carolina Division of Public Health. We've got another hot topic this morning here, other than the one dealing with volcano emissions. This time we're dealing with health insurance, so I'm hoping to give you a little insight on what we've been doing in North Carolina. I don't have any relationships to disclose except that with my family, my wife and my children. I think everyone knows that asthma is a significant chronic disease with many, many people diagnosed with that condition. We do have differences in terms of the estimates in terms of the economic burden. We heard from Dr. Nurmagomedov that from CDC in 2007, their estimate for medical expenditures was over $56 billion. This estimate came from NHLBI, so regardless of the magnitude of the number, you know, we see that it's still quite a burden economically. Health insurance has been in the news for some time, and most recently in the last year, we see more of that coming out of the public sector from federal agencies, and here, this is an example from the National Academies from a report that was issued in 2009 talking about the fact that health insurance is essential for health and well-being. And we'll refer to this a little bit later on in our presentation. Most recently, actually it was in September, the U.S. Census Bureau came out with the fact that income poverty and health insurance coverage in the United States, what they did was updated the figures in that those without health insurance coverage have risen from 46 million in 2008 to 50 million in 2009. So what we're seeing here is the phenomenon that there is a lack of health insurance. The rate of this is going up year after year. So what are we going to do this morning? What we like to do is to talk about the relationship between private, public, and no insurance coverage and some selected asthma management behaviors. We're going to talk about the implications of not having health insurance coverage on inadequate disease management and increased disease exacerbation. We're relying primarily on population-based data, and that is the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. These are data that were collected cross-sectionally in 2008 for the entire state of North Carolina. And we have heard some limitations about such data, but these are the best that we have. They do give a snapshot of a state, and we have limited our study samples only to adults between the ages of 18 and 64. So that precludes people with Medicare, but it does include people with insurance such as Medicaid and other state health plans. What we're interested in are, of course, health insurance coverage, asthma attacks, the use of asthma medications, visits to the ED, visits to doctor offices for urgent care, and inhaler usage. Our index cases are adults who are ages 18 to 64 with current asthma and without insurance. We've done bivariate and logistic regression analyses. Okay, I think all of us know that the prevalence of asthma has been going up over the last 10 years. The red line is for the United States lifetime asthma prevalence. Underneath is the lifetime prevalence for North Carolina, and you see the time trend of an increase from 2000 to 2009. Likewise, we also see a slight increase in current asthma for both the United States and for North Carolina over the last 10 years. What are our findings? We're going to talk about them in terms of these five, six categories. Health insurance coverage, we find that people with current asthma have more public health coverage. terms of attacks, compared to people without health insurance, those with public health insurance have more asthma attacks and episodes. And it was not significant for those covered by private insurance. ED visits, no differences between the groups. Doctor urgent care treatment visits, again, no differences between the different insurance coverages. Inhaler usage. Okay, what we see here is something that is almost at the 0.05 level for those with public health insurance and current asthma in terms of using, or that they're more likely to be using an inhaler. Asthma medications, compared to those without health insurance, individuals with current asthma who have public and private health coverage are more likely to be using asthma medications on a daily basis. So in summary, and this is again a repeat of what I just said previously, with private or public health insurance, they're significantly more likely to report daily use of asthma medications. And there are implications for this, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. With public insurance, they're more likely to report having an asthma attack and inhaler use. And again, this may be due to the effects of race and education, which we did not control for, but they were confounding, they had a confounding impact on some of these other findings that we saw. We did not see any differences between the insurance groups for ED visits or doctor urgent care visits. So again, the implications, and I think, you know, it's kind of logical for us to see that without health insurance, you're less likely to have access to asthma medication. So potentially, what that means is that you might have inadequate disease management. And because of that, disease will become more severe and get exacerbated. And again, without health insurance, most likely you're going to end up in the ED, in the emergency departments, or finding care in other ways. And so that will have a very drastic impact on healthcare utilization. Okay, back to the report that we mentioned earlier from the National Academy of Medicine. And here that report says very clearly, children with health insurance have fewer avoidable hospitalizations, improved asthma outcomes, and fewer missed days of school. And that's pretty common knowledge. However, with uninsured adults with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or asthma exacerbation, they are more likely to suffer poor health outcomes. So we have documentation at the national level that this is going on. And then most recently, those of you who are members of APHA got the newsletter, The Nation's Health, on the front page. Here we see the words uninsured. And I think it's very good that our parent organization has recognized the importance of this issue. And then just yesterday, for those of you who do keep up with the CDC Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, an early release just yesterday, November 9th, and I will quote from them. They said, currently insured persons aged 18 to 64 who had 1 to 3 month gap in coverage. Okay, we're talking about not lack of insurance, but a gap in coverage. During the preceding year, were approximately 3 times as likely to forego needed care if they had hypertension, diabetes, or asthma. And for asthma, the percentages were 26% versus 8% for those who had this gap in insurance. Also among persons 18 to 64, and that was our study sample, those who were uninsured at the time of the interview were approximately 3 times as likely to forego needed care because of cost as those with Medicaid at the time of the interview, and 6 times as likely to forego needed care because of cost as those with private insurance at the time of the interview. So we see that this issue is something that we all need to deal with, and I think we'll see a little bit more in the next few years in terms of how it's going to play out with respect to the national political environment. Thank you very much. I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, who used to be with the Division of Public Health, as well as supporting funding from the Centers for Disease Control for an asthma grant that our state currently has.
Okay. Because you've managed to keep your time, so questions first with you alone.
All right.
The data with the public health or public insurance versus private insurance that showed the use of medications.
Right.
Okay, for asthma. Well, I wonder if some of that may be that the people who have Medicaid in general have less restrictions on what medications can be used. And the people who have private insurance, mainly HMOs, regulate strictly which medicines can be used.
Exactly.
Or approve as many medications, where you don't have that in the public insurance.
That's correct, yeah. That's a good point, though. And unfortunately, our data comes from the larger BRFSS survey, so we're not able to break down some of these finer areas which come from yet another survey called the BRFSS Adult Callback, which comprises of 90 to 100 questions. And once we start analyzing those, we'll have a better feel for the type of medications that these individuals have based on their insurance coverage. And here, what we did in terms of defining public and private was just to lump everyone, you know, with Medicaid or being on a state health plan as being public, and then anything else as being private. So, you know, these are very gross categories, but that's a real good point in terms of your access and what your coverage allows in terms of medication use.
I work in a community-based clinic, and, you know, for us, the people who have no insurance are, you know, the hardest to try to get medications for, but those who have public aid or Medicaid, you know, you're almost like, oh, good, you have that, because if we have to get it for the insured patients, it's a lot more difficult, more restrictive. So it's almost like if you have a medical card, you're like a relief, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that you've got insurance, and we have less restrictions on what we can prescribe to you.
Well, that's one of the challenges of health reform, is to make this clear for the...
Not that that's necessarily good, because then you may be overusing medication that maybe, you know, you shouldn't be, perhaps.
My comments is you're using BRFSS, which is cross-sectional, because the timing. You don't know, the healthy people may choose to not have insurance, but people with asthma, they may have to, so we don't... It's hard to know from BRFSS.
That's a good point. That's a good point, although these are from 2008, before the big recession. Okay. So it is hard to tell. I mean, there are a lot of confounding variables, and as was mentioned previously, you know, these cross-sectional surveys have their limitations, but they do give a snapshot of a particular area.
But to follow up on that question, if I understood your data correctly, it does look like there's this sort of healthy cohort effect in terms of who in these groups.
Sure.
Because you would think that normally those without insurance would not be getting appropriate care, would be sicker, would have difficulty getting the medicines, would have more ER visits, hospitalizations, and your data seem to show the reverse. Mm-hmm. So it seems as if those people who were sick, many of them were able to get insured one way or another.
That's a good point, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wonder that what's happening, because I work at a big patient facility in Virginia, and those uninsured, when they come to our ER, and they will come because they know we're going to give them the inhalers, they keep coming. So the hospital realized we pay for those patients, so every patient that comes through the ER, and it doesn't matter, especially the children, cannot be discharged unless one of the parents will attend a 3-hour asthma class. And it's when those patients will get a spirometry. So those patients that have ER visits at first will have more spirometry because we're forcing them that, look, you're coming here all the time, you're going to get this right this time. You're going to get a spirometry so I know where you stand taking care of it and coming back. So the hospital realized we still have this issue, so we are going to take care of it. Mm-hmm. We're going to send you home for good because we don't want you back here. Versus most hospitals would be, oh no, not insurance. You know what? Give some inhalers, go home. They're going to come back. So the hospital decided the insurance people know where to get the care. They're going to go to the private doctors, and hopefully those private doctors will be getting the permission for me or not. So at some point, we feel like actually our uninsured are getting a better care because when they come to us, we take, you know, we try to send them home for good. And how they get a vacation after that, some of them will come back, not so much as us, maybe just kind of pretending because I need a refill, but it's cheaper for us to do the refill than have to admit it for 5-6 days. So just pretend that, okay,
I mean, another piece is the adults with public health insurance. Also, the more severe your disease is, and the, you know, the more likely you're going to be able to qualify for public insurance as opposed to. So it may be that people who have only mild asthma never can qualify for it because they, you know, versus the severe asthmatics who require, you know, frequent hospitalizations are able to get that approved.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. Tricky parts of it.
So I'll open up now for any of the speakers for questions you may have, and we'll do that for a couple minutes, and then we can speak privately. Yes. Officially, according to the New Jersey legislation, if the doctor signs order saying the kid can carry it, they're supposed to be. But at the school district level, they can apply their own regulations. There is no central authority over those school districts, basically, in New Jersey. We have, I think, 561 different school districts.
So they can just go against
and they can make, and they can decide that at their place that this isn't appropriate. And the school nurses, I think, have actually often a good feel for their school and what's happening and who knows about asthma. The teachers actually in New Jersey, the regular school teachers are actually required to have 1 year of asthma education each year. In fact, that doesn't happen in general, and we've wondered why. And the answer is there's no one supervising. There are all sorts of band-aids that the superintendents get throughout the U.S., and they follow those that they wish to. So in some schools, the nurses do conduct asthma education and train the teachers well, and other places don't, and that may really relate to how they feel they can handle asthma issues within the school.
And that's whether it's whether the child probably at the school level or district level is allowed to, because there are certainly many children, either as a building provider, you know, who are younger, they can manage their diabetes very well. At a young age, I certainly feel personally that there are many kids who are that age who can carry an inhaler and treat themselves.
Yes. Exactly. Law permits it, and we've seen an increase over the years since that law was passed where school districts now decide that, yes, kids can carry inhalers. There are legal liability issues, obviously, that go on, and the schools aren't necessarily released from legal liability even if they have a signed physician order. So a lot of them haven't decided how to deal with that.
Show very interesting clusters and variations. Have you had a chance to look at what is the driving factors? More air fluid?
We're beginning to look at that, and it's actually very complicated. I think in different areas, it's different factors. So for example, I think one contribute in some areas which are rural is the kids have to travel by bus, diesel exposure. So I think that may relate to some of the high rates that are seen. In other places, we have very high traffic patterns and very congested. So there are a couple of areas I could show you on this map, which in the local school district are very high, and that's exactly where we have tons of traffic there. We have some other places where it's, I think, either indoor or outdoor pollution that's involved. And I think that for the most part, much of the variance is going to be unexplained by the factors that we know about so far.
Socioeconomics,
I do see some trends there. When we're using those surrogate variables about school lunch and so on, we do see some correlations of that when we look at overall in New Jersey. So some of it seems to make sense, but there are a lot of details that don't. Yes? What's actually a very interesting problem when you think about pets, if you have continued exposure to the same pet, that sometimes you become accustomed to it and can be in relatively good control. There's another interesting problem in asthma epidemiology in terms of all the definitions. What if I have asthma, you give me a bunch of medications, I'm well controlled, and I have absolutely no attacks? Do I still have asthma? How are they going to answer the question? At least with our study, because they have the medications, we believe they're still going to be reported to the school nurse and get over that issue. But if you looked at the earlier NHLBI guidelines for treatment, not the latest ones, it was very interesting. Some clinicians followed it and classified people as to their severity of asthma, and then people improved as they were seeing and said, oh, this is the treatment for this less severe, and took away the medicines, and the patients got more severe, and they went back up. Well, those guidelines were always meant for the initial diagnosis of asthma, not for continuing treatment, but the vast majority of treating clinicians misunderstood that. So the latest guidelines fix it, but the latest guidelines are hundreds of pages long, and I know very few physicians who've read them carefully. So there is actually some economic data, I think, in asthma to show that specialist care makes a difference. And I think your data also tend to show that on the economic analysis. Yes. So one thing actually let me tell you, all of you can feel free to go to the PACNJ site, PACNJ. So it's www.pacnj.org. They have asthma treatment plans there that you can download, and they've been translated into multiple languages. It's also been designed for the physicians. You can fill it out in English and then print out the instructions in other languages so that the family will have it translated. I think one problem we've seen is ONSE, which the question is whether it's once or is it 11? And we've had people where they've made a mistake. We've had pharmacies make that mistake in terms of how people instruct it. So having it translated into the correct language is there. So you're welcome to use that form. Anyone in the world can download it.
When you mentioned the pets, again, it's a kind of timing. If a child's diagnosis with asthma, the parents, they change their lifestyles. They get rid of the pets. Maybe get the hardwood floor, or they quit their smoking. So when you do those kind of studies, you will find that totally wrong, unexpected relationship. Like, wow, the smoking is protective for asthma prevalence. So, yeah, so he can smoke because my child doesn't have asthma. I can smoke. But ask my children and parents, and all of my quick for my children.
Right, but then as an adult, they get asthma because their parents smoke, and then as a child, but their lungs are chronically exposed to it, and then more likely, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Yes.
Which one happened first?
Right.
So you've got to be very careful on this. The cross-sectional data can be very misleading. And we've seen that in some of the discussion here today. So we all have a lot of work to do.